So welcome everyone to the next in our series, The Leadership Hikers. My name's Joanna Bircher and I'm a GP in Greater Manchester. And together with my colleague, Dr. Amar Righani, who's a retired GP from Sheffield, we're talking with people, mainly from primary care, who have inspired us with their stories of what they care about and how they've helped to make life better for their communities. We've written about what it takes to lead well in our book, The Leadership Hike. And this series is all about the people who do this. The people we call the leadership hikers. It's about what they've learned and what we might too. Today, I'm really delighted to welcome the next of our hikers, who is Shanaz Stansfield. Now, Shanaz is a practice manager in Gateshead and is also the transformation lead for her PCN. She also has a national role as a development advisor for the National Primary Care Transformation Team for NHS England. So welcome, Shanaz. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Joanna.
So I did think starting off with the story would be a good place to start. So I'd just love you to just share a bit about what kind of led you to take on a leadership role within primary care.
It was a very interesting journey because I'd grown up thinking that I would be a housewife. My dad was a diabetic, and when we lived in Africa, there was a nurse who used to care for my dad, and I wanted to be that nurse. But the environment that I was growing up in, being a nurse wasn't a chosen profession for women. So I came to Newcastle. I was a healthcare assistant, and then I did my enrolled nurse training because I didn't have any qualifications. I literally had no qualifications at all when I left home. So as I was training to be a nurse, I went to night school to get the qualifications to do the next thing. And people who've been enrolled nurses will realize that once you get onto that treadmill of educating and learning, that you just want to keep going and going. So I then got the qualifications to become a staff nurse in Newcastle. I worked as a staff nurse, went away to become an occupational health nurse, and my thirst for learning just grew and grew. But as an occupational health nurse, I wasn't using my skills, I wasn't using my languages, and I had this interest in population health. So somebody invited me to become a school health advisor, and I went to get some careers advice, and they said, actually, that isn't the right role for you. You should become a health visitor. I've got five languages. So I then trained to be a health visitor, and I absolutely loved being a health visitor. Unfortunately, halfway through my health visitor training, I became ill and had cancer, and I almost wasn't able to continue my journey, but I made it and I qualified with the group I'd started with. I worked as a health visitor only for a year though, because even in health visiting at the time, we weren't encouraged to do the things that improve patient care. We were doing transactional work, which didn't really meet my personal needs in terms of the way I want to care for people. And then a role became available in commissioning in the very early years of commissioning in 1992, a long time ago, as a Black and Ethnic Minority Commissioning Manager. So I applied for and I got that job. And in that job, I was able to do all the things that interested me around developing an interpreter service, having food for people from diverse communities in hospital. But then whilst I was working in commissioning, almost every 2 years the organisational changed, and every 2 years I had to reapply for the job, and you never really finished anything. And I found after 20 years in commissioning, I was burnt out. I felt let down and failed by the NHS, both as a patient and as a manager, because I wasn't going anywhere in my career. I was a senior manager, I'd done lots of little projects, but nothing that really met my passion for providing high quality of care. And I wanted to work with primary care. And in those days, funding always went to secondary care, you know, to those waiting list initiatives. And I was leaving the NHS. I decided I was going to go and do a PhD. And literally a month before I was leaving, I was invited to this GP practice to go and do some work with them around an information system. And I had a very heated discussion with the GP in that practice. And that was really interesting, because he walked out of the room, and then 10 minutes later, and he walked back in and said, "So, Mrs. Stansfield, when are you going to apply for this job?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, we need somebody who's going to be forward thinking, somebody who's going to question and challenge us, and somebody who's actually going to be looking outside the practice for us. And we think you've got the skills to be able to do that." I then was interviewed for the practice manager job. I'd never seen myself in a practice manager job ever. But then I went for 18 months. And I am so pleased to say it was the best career decision I ever made. I've been there for 15 years and I've absolutely loved every minute of it.
But what was it about it then? What felt so different once you'd landed in that general practice?
The thing that was different about this practice was that they were a forward-thinking practice and they treated me as an equal. So, you know, diversity and inclusion was so important to them, and as a Black woman, for me to step into that space and also to find my tribe, because what these GPs cared about was vulnerability. They cared about, you know, homelessness, refugees and asylum seekers. They just really cared about vulnerable people. But the most important thing was they focused on quality and not the contract. So the focus always was on doing the right thing for the patient. And then if it fitted to the contract, that was fine. But often we did so much more. And it was actually stepping into that space, using my health listing skills, using my nursing skills, were all the things that actually, it just felt so comfortable that I'd actually stepped in absolutely the right place for myself.
And you did. I mean, it was such an almost a convoluted journey, wasn't it, in terms of you going on this kind of massive complex hike in order to eventually find your what proved to be the right destination in the end. What kind of things did you learn about yourself during that process of discovery?
The things I learned about myself was that academic learning isn't always the right thing. You know, I had an MBA by this time, you know, having left school with no qualifications. I gathered lots and lots of qualifications, had an MBA, but the MBA gave me the transactional skills. It didn't give me the transformational skills I needed to be able to transform the practice that I was working in and actually achieve all the things that these GPs aspired to around vulnerability. And I was given an opportunity to actually do a quality improvement program, and doing that quality improvement program helped me get the right skills to be able to make that change. And one thing I learned about that quality improvement about myself was that I needed to work through others to lead. I needed to have the team. You know, as a leader, if you look behind you and then there are no followers, you're not a leader, you're just a title in a big office. But what I wanted was actually, as I look behind me, I wanted my whole team standing behind me. And that was a very complex and hard job to do. The reason being was that my predecessor practice managers had been transactional managers. You know, they told the team what to do. I wasn't here to tell people what to do. I was here to work with them, because I'd never worked in general practice. I didn't know general practice. I had so much to learn. And the narrative around, you know, you're at the front desk every day. You know what happens with patients. I don't. Can we work together? Working with the nurses, you know, because although I was a nurse, I'd never worked in general practice before, but saying to the nurses, this is your job, you do it every day, what can we do to make things better? You know, your patients are sitting outside in the waiting room for half an hour or longer sometimes because the appointments have taken so long, what can we do to start doing those things together? And it was actually quality improvement tools by actually using a phased approach to understanding our baselines, but then working together to identify what the problem was. But more important, saying to the team, okay, so what's the solution? Because I haven't got a clue, I've never worked in general practice. And do you know what, Joanna? The team came up with the most amazing solutions that we then tested. But because they were then connected and engaged, they were doing the testing. So I wasn't doing things to them. What they were doing was actually transforming their own environment. And for me to watch that was an absolute pleasure.
Now that, I mean, that's an amazing story. I know that you've made it sound easy, and I don't think it can have been. We know habits of working for somebody who tells you, you know, who sets the agenda, tells you what you need to do, and you deliver that. And, you know, that can work effectively in a lot of places, but it can set up a kind of sense of a learned helplessness, doesn't it? I don't come up with new ideas myself, because I just implement what other people tell me to do. Those embedded habits can be pretty hard to break. So I'm sure it wasn't as easy as it sounds. Did you encounter any kind of difficulties en route in taking them to that new place? How did you overcome those?
And I think that learned helplessness is so important, because we do it with our children, don't we? We do everything for them. And then at work, sometimes it's easier to do things for people rather than work with them to show them how to do it better. It was, again, that thing about I'm not here to manage you. I'm here to support you and develop you and grow you to be the best possible version of yourself. So that you can take responsibility for the things that you have influence over. And it took a long time to almost get rid of that learned helplessness within the team, to actually get them to a point where actually they would question and challenge me. And once they started to question and challenge me, that's when I felt that I'd made a difference. They were able to knock on my door rather than asking me for solutions. They'd be asking questions about, why are you doing this? How are we going to do this? Let's do it together. Let's do it better. And that was a transformational process, and it took a long time.
What kind of situations have you learned your best lessons about you as a leader and kind of your impact and your skills?
One of my first things to do, and I had been told that my job was really a merger job. It wasn't really a practice manager job, and I'd never gone through a merger before. It wasn't. And there was this woman, and she was a Band 2 healthcare assistant. And when we merged with her smaller practice, everybody else left and she was left behind on her own. And she didn't like me. She didn't like me because I'd actually destroyed her life and I destroyed her team. And I kept my distance from her. But what I did was worked with others in the team to start to grow her because I could see the potential in her. And she went off then and did a practice nurse course. And about 3 months ago, she was appointed as our team leader. She went off and did a leadership course. She's now the practice nurse team leader. And she is the most amazing team leader that we've ever had in our practice. And she asked me to be a mentor when she was doing her leadership program. And for me, that was the learning about myself, that sometimes I have to make some really hard decisions. And when people disconnect from me, that's fine at that time because I've got to support them. And what I did was support Catherine through the team and to see her grow and flourish and still be with us. And to be a qualified nurse and a qualified leader leading an amazing team and coming up with the most innovative solutions to the problems of practice nursing have been a joy for me.
Yeah, I can see that. So there was something there about giving people time and space and not taking it personally. Does that sound about right?
Absolutely. And I think it's something that I've heard somebody else say is that there is so much policy and there are so many, you know, standard operating procedures that rain down on us. And I think as leaders, we're the umbrella. We have to hold that umbrella up to stop all of that raining down on our teams. So it means I have to take the hard knocks. It means I have to make the hard decisions. But also it means that I need to protect my team to support them and share with them and support them and grow them. And sometimes making those hard decisions, you can't actually share those hard decisions for a variety of reasons. But I think paving the way, opening the doors, helping them to be the best possible versions of themselves during those difficult times is an opportunity. And COVID was exactly that, wasn't it?
Hmm. Yeah, I think practices are going through a lot of difficult times at the moment, aren't they?
They are.
With demand and all the other challenges. So a nice analogy about the umbrella. Stop things raining down, but then that makes me a bit fearful of the well-being of the person holding the umbrella. I don't know whether that's ever been an issue.
So I've been really fortunate in this role that I've met some amazing people, and those amazing people have held my hand. But the GPs in the practice were the first. You know, they allowed me to be myself. They allowed me to be vulnerable. And we have a team where we challenge each other, we question each other, we oppose decisions, but actually we have really good debate. And because we have that, it means I can implicitly trust the people that I work with. And because I implicitly trust them, when I feel vulnerable, I can have a conversation about being vulnerable and I know that they will support me. And also, I suppose I've learned that there's no shame in being vulnerable. And if you ask for help, even from your reception team, your admin team, your nursing team, they care enough and we trust each other enough to be able to support each other. And for me as a leader, being vulnerable with your team, with the people that you work with and care about, I think it's an important skill. It's something you have to grow and build.
In your kind of development of your leadership, I know that you've been in the practice many, many years now. Have you ever had to learn some hard lessons about yourself? What's, you know, in terms of, if you don't mind sharing, have there been any moments that you're happy to share?
I suppose when I first became a practice manager, I'd never had any mentorship. You know, I'd done Belbin and I'd done Myers-Briggs, but those things don't teach you anything about yourself as a person. So very early on when I was doing a quality improvement program, I got the opportunity to use something called strength development inventory. And that actually looked at how we develop better relationships. And it was quite interesting because I did this and I was in a room of 20 GPs and I was the only practice manager. And my motivational value system was RED, which is all about performance. And we like to get rewards and we like to get feedback. And we always like to be the first, you know, to do things. And everybody in the room, I'd only been with them a couple of days, and they all said, yeah, you're an absolute RED. And that was because the language I was using, and I had never, ever, I'd known those things about myself, and nobody had ever reflected those things back to me. And certainly in practice management, you know, when I'd asked for mentorship, it wasn't available. When I've asked for leadership development, it wasn't available to me. But actually just 2 days in a room of complete strangers doing this taught me so much about myself, about what I was doing wrong around developing relationships, because what I was talking about was all the amazing things that we'd done. But changing the status quo is about sometimes about moderating those messages and almost moderating your language, moderating the narrative around the people that you're with and the people that you want to influence. So the hardest thing I had to learn about myself was actually my behaviors, because they were risk taking and they were gambling, and other people saw those as challenging and aggressive. But as soon as I started to learn that about myself, I started to moderate my behaviors, moderate my language, and certainly change the narrative around why these things were important to me. So as a leader, rather than talking about what I was doing, I started to talk about why it was important. And the reason I get out of bed in the morning was because as a nurse, I cared about people. And that has never gone away. As a practice manager, I deeply, deeply care about my staff. I deeply, deeply care about my patients. Previously, I hadn't been able to make those changes because I didn't have the influence. As a practice manager, I had the influence to make that change in my practice and then learn and share from that.
There was something about kind of sharing the great, obviously you've achieved lots of great things, and there was something about using the language to share that with others that maybe you're saying kind of impacted the relationship and changed your level of influence.
Yeah, we went through a period where we were winning a lot of awards. So I was constantly at award ceremonies. I was on the television, I was on the news. And I think that was that disconnected people from me. And I understand that now, because as soon as I started to then develop my team, so the care navigators went and talked about how they develop care navigating, they went and actually talked at conferences. The new roles that we were developing around the frailty nurse, she went and talked at conferences, and people were able to more easily connect with them because of the narratives and the words and the language that they were using, and I learned from them. And I've completely seen a change in myself and my behaviors over those years, but having never had any mentorship, having never had those behaviors reflected to me, I didn't know that my behaviors were actually triggering people into conflict with me. And I remember saying often to my practice manager colleagues, I don't know why people don't like me. I really care. I really care about you all. Why don't you like me? And as soon as I'd done this, it made me realize it was my behaviors that were triggering people.
So that sounds like that might have been quite a painful insight. Or are you just someone that kind of welcomes that kind of thing? I think some of us would struggle with that.
Yeah, it was really hard at the time.
Yeah, I bet.
But I suppose, you know, and that's again about practice manager development for me, because I've been a champion for practice manager development in all the years I've been a practice manager, because there is no formal role for a practice manager. There is no job description for a manager. There's no competency framework. We don't get personal development. We were very lucky if we get appraisal. So I'd never had those opportunities ever as a practice manager, but being part of a bigger team helped me to get that from outside of practice management. And I think as a practice manager now, I'm quite fortunate that I've been working with NHS England and we have developed that competency framework. And what I'm hoping in the future is that we will have a transformational development program for practice managers where we learn about ourselves, but we actually get mentorship to actually help to reflect back to us about what we do to make things better for ourselves. Because as you develop as a leader, you empower your team and you share your workload.
Yeah, I mean, I always want to big up practice managers, the skill set that you have and the amount of stuff you have to juggle in your roles, I think is just incredible. What do you think has been your kind of greatest challenge as a practice manager, and how did you tackle that?
My biggest challenge was that I actually didn't understand general practice. You know, I'd been a nurse, I'd worked in commissioning, I understood the system, but I didn't understand general practice. And understanding that mindset was a big challenge. And then working with the team to understand that difference, because general practice is so different from anywhere else you would ever work. But working with the team, working with members who'd been there for quite a long time, but actually helped them to think differently, to address the needs of our populations now, was helpful for me. And I think one of the most important things is that I know that now I can be exhausting, and that change is exhausting.
Okay, tell me a bit more about that. Because it sounded like the challenge actually turned out to be an advantage, because it meant that you used all your active listening skills to get to let the team guide you, which sounds like it was a positive thing. So tell me about this kind of change being exhausting.
So change is exhausting, but I think so. As soon as I arrived, one of the first things I did was I put a big piece of paper on the wall, and that every time somebody came to me with a problem, I would write this thing on my flip chart, and I had this really long flip chart. But I didn't understand the practice enough to be able to address any of those things on my own. But I was able to start to implement some of the changes, things like putting in a proper HR process, things like making sure we had somebody to come to do our shredding rather than staff standing shredding all day. But it was little things like saying to staff, you know, if you're going to boil a kettle, we need to be aware of energy. Just boil one cup of tea. You don't need to boil the whole kettle. Shut the windows when the when the heating's on. Those might seem like little things, but they were massive changes. You know, it was like the new broom sweeping clean. But I care about the environment. Costs were going up. We needed to start thinking about that. But doing those little things helped me how not to do those little things. But putting in place an admin team meeting, putting in place a nurse team meeting, asking them what the agenda might be, getting them to actually talk to the agenda, getting them to actually come up with the solutions of the problems that they were identifying, but as teams, and then using quality improvement tools to actually test out their theories helped us to actually achieve that change, but slowly rather than big bang, you know, large scale change. Mm-hmm. We did really small things, but the small things over 15 years have led to transformational change in the practice.
You're a very active person, full of energy. How do you cope with the fact that change is slow? I'd love to know because I imagine you quite like to get things done pretty fast if you can.
One of the things about my motivational value system is I'm not a details person. I am I'm a snowplow. I make that change. But what I do is surround myself with people who compliment me. So, you know, often as leaders, we like to have people who think like us and who are like us around us. What I've done is actually developed a leadership team that completely is different to me. So I've got somebody who does huge amounts of detail. I've got somebody who really does the people stuff really, really well. Understanding that we have different skills, but together we make a complementary team has been one of the most valuable lessons for me, because having people around me who are like me, who agree with everything that I do, would end up in an echo chamber where we wouldn't make any change. And for me, not so much change, but doing the right thing is important. But having a team around me who will challenge me, who will oppose me, who will embed a little bit of conflict, so we can have those really good conversations about what's the right thing to do and then test those things, has been a valuable experience.
I think that's an absolutely lovely insight about almost like we're all pieces of a jigsaw, and unless we're all put together, we can't make that picture. But if we were all the same piece of a jigsaw, then it would be a pretty rubbish jigsaw. So I love that. I love that analogy. So I know you've shared with me that you're approaching the end of your practice manager career sometime this year. And so I'm thinking, before you do that, what would you say to anyone who's just setting out in primary care, who might be starting to think about a leadership role, or they're in primary care and they're thinking of moving in that direction? What would be your top tips?
Very early on in my career, I read a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. It's only $4.99. I think people should buy it. And what she talks about there is a worm who lives in a rabbit radish thinks that radish is a world. And I think sometimes that's where general practice is. You know, we've worked in general practice. We haven't really peeked our heads out of that radish to see what the world is like. And I think practice managers need to peek out of general practice to see what the world is like, because there are so many opportunities for practice managers, because we have so many phenomenal skills. But as part of that, sticking your head out of that radish is about be your true self, be your authentic true self, and look after yourself. You know, so many practice managers work so many hours. I go to the gym every night now, and I make a time for to go, and nothing will stop me getting to the gym every night, because that's what helps me to manage my frustrations and the challenges of the days ahead. But I think also build alliances of people around you who will help you to the best possible version of yourself, not people who will actually connect with you around the same things in terms of making you grumpy, but actually grow, have influence, and value yourself and connect in with the system with an understanding that you're awesome. And you've got so many skills, and those skills are absolutely what we need in the NHS now.
Oh, no, I think that's an absolutely lovely place to finish, Shanaz. Thank you so much for joining me today. So it was great to just talk to Shanaz, somebody from a practice manager background who'd gone on such a complex journey to get to eventually find her tribe in general practice. And obviously as a GP myself, I was delighted to hear that's where her final resting stop was, on her leadership hike, and all the reasons why that was. And she had some fantastic things to say, the wonderful insight that we don't have to bring everything as a leader. We bring our unique selves, and we understand our strengths and our gaps, and then we let other people fill those gaps. We get a team around us who can support us to do the things that we're less good at. And her a wonderful honesty around that realization of the shadow side of some of the language that she'd been using. And I got a sense that there was a bit of regret in how long it had taken her to get any to get the insight into that. So she seems like a bit of a plug out there for if you're on a leadership journey yourself, to get yourself a mentor or somebody who can and help you to explore both your strengths and then the potential shadow side of those strengths that you might cast on others that might interfere with your relationships and your influence. So she had some great stories to tell. And although I think she's soon to be retiring from her practice manager role, I'm sure we will be seeing a lot more of her in the future in another capacity. So it was great to talk to her today. And that's the end of today's episode. So look out for our next Leadership Hikers podcast, which will be released shortly.